This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Welcome to the Row One Seat One podcast. This is Ben, aka Boston Nuga. Had a fun time this past weekend at TWE in Chattanooga. That is my local indie. Once again, I can't stress enough, take your kids to local wrestling. It is a blast. Ava had the most wonderful time there. She has her run of the place, basically. She got to play around in the ring afterwards. I had a little bit of a controversial tweet this week where I said it's a advisable to let your kids play around in the ring. I know it's a liability, but she had a really good time. There was a lot of adult supervision when the kids were playing around in the ring, but it really fosters their love of wrestling and really lets them kind of connect with the ring and connect with what wrestling is. And so long as, again, there's a lot of adult supervision, it really doesn't hurt. So that's my little hill I guess I'm dying on this week. Is, you know, let the kids play in the ring a little bit after the show, especially if they've been sitting through a three-hour show. Let them work out some energy. You know, it was 11 o'clock at night. You know, they just want to play around. So that was my little spiel. But this week we got a fun show. What people, you guys may not know, but is an interesting character in the Chattanooga area and has some real fun stories. I have Micah Hughes on to the show. Micah, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you. I'm glad to be on.
Micah, you were the promoter of NWA Chattanooga. You were the promoter of some other groups in Chattanooga. And you have an interesting past in the Chattanooga area in wrestling. Tell us some of the groups you promoted.
I say promote. It was really, I was just a part. NWA Chattanooga was really the Reverend Dan Wilson and, Ace Rockwell and Sean Tempers and Tank and those guys, they're the ones who promoted it. Really, I was just I brought the ring and did some flyers and things like that. I did do some promotion with Drill and Rush Wrestling, ARW, and some things like that. And I wrestled for about 2 years, 2.5 years there in the Chattanooga area. Branched out, wrestled for Peach State and Carrollton. Did some NWA main event stuff in Nashville and places like that. Very brief. I got out really before things got started with me, but enjoyed every minute of it. And love wrestling, love to talk about it. And I know talking to Scott Hensley, he's been trying to get me forever to write a book on some of my training and some of the things that I got involved with. The guy who originally started training me and some things like that. So he's been on me for a while about trying to talk about it or write a book or do something like that. So that's what we're here to do tonight.
Let's back up a little bit. What fostered your love of wrestling? Because you grew up in Chattanooga, right?
I did. I grew up in Chattanooga. Really, I think like everybody else watching on TV, that was kind of the big thing for me. Anytime I could get a hold of wrestling DVDs, we could watch pay-per-views. My family was really heavy involved with it. My great-grandmother, she was a huge, she used to call him Rick Blair, but she was a huge, huge wrestling fan. I would have a thing of snuff in, and she'd be out there, cheering on, wrestling. So it really evolved from that. My brother was a big wrestling fan. And then when I got to high school, a lot of those local guys, like I was talking about, Ace Rockwell, Sean Tempers, those guys, would come to the school and they would put on shows. So, we saw them and knowing, hey, they graduated from the same school we went to, and things like that. So that kind of evolved it even more. And then I had a buddy who ended up being my tag team partner. We went by the name Celtic Nation. I have red hair and he's got red hair and he's this big, huge, burly looking guy. So we started kind of together, and he really loved wrestling. So ring in the backyard, doing all that type stuff. He actually had his dad create this, I'm talking like elaborate ring that was phenomenal. I mean, he ended up getting like 30 or 40 tires, plywood, real ropes. I mean, it was an elaborate setup in his backyard. And so when I was junior and senior in high school, I mean, every weekend we were there. I mean, anything we could do to videotape and do all that kind of stuff. I think probably like a lot of other people, nothing kind of different there. You know, just loved it. I mean, WCW, anything I could do, the video games, all that type stuff. I mean, it was great. And then as I evolved.
And Chattanooga was WCW country, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And so, you know, that was a big thing for me. Thunder and the video, when the video games came out, I was like first in line for those PlayStation games, you know, just the bad graphics and everything and all that type stuff. And so, you know, and then really once I got into it, I really fell in love with watching the indie wrestling, you know, the Full Impact Pros and those DVDs you get at the flea market, you know, that are just like, you know, just, you know, really anything like that I kind of fell in love with as well. Just really more on the indie scene, I think, after I kind of I got a little older, you know, that was kind of where I really enjoyed watching a lot of that stuff. So that's kind of where things cultivated for me as far as just wrestling in general. And you know, I think, like I said, probably much like a lot of other people, nothing different there. So
Now, and you said your family encouraged this. You know, I just picture Granny putting the snuff in and all that sort of stuff, you know, watching wrestling and that sort of, you know. Was wrestling cool growing up, or was it, you know, I mean, in the South, or was it one of those sort of things you kind of had to hide, being a fan?
Well, I'll be honest with you. My dad was my elementary school principal.
Oh, sure.
So I would try to go to, you know, I had a cut-off Goldberg T-shirt that I had gotten at Walmart. Well, he was absolutely not letting me wear that to school, you know. So it was kind of like my, you know, my parents and things like that weren't wrestling fans. It was more, you know, my great grandparents and, you know, my grandfather was a big wrestling fan and things. So, you know, it was more, I guess, at times something you'd hide, you know, oh, you know, so-and-so watched wrestling last, you know, like nothing bad, but it was just like, you know, it wasn't something that I guess was what you would say classy, maybe. Well, I don't know.
It's the Bible Belt. That's why I'm asking. You know?
Right. Yeah. And that was really, honestly, that was kind of the thing. It was just something that, you know, hey, that's kind of redneck, you know, we're watching wrestling. So, you know, I would say my family was kind of split on it, to be honest with you. My mom and dad were, they didn't like wrestling, even especially when I got into it. It was, you know, it was something that they didn't, they don't say discouraged, but they were just like, we're not telling people that he does pro wrestling, you know, things like that. So, but it never discouraged me from loving it and watching it and, you know, wanting to be a part and doing all that kind of stuff. That was never a discouragement on my part. But I know what you're saying 100%. Mm-hmm. I agree. It is a lot of times, especially, you know, in certain areas, it's kind of like, hey, that's redneck stuff. Don't be doing that. So
now, how old were you when you went to your first big show?
I'd say 9 or 10. I remember it was Goldberg and Bam Bam Bigelow. They were out.
Oh, that's amazing.
It was a WCW show. And we had left a little bit early, and they ended up, they were doing something where it had come out into the parking lot or something. And we actually were like, we left actually at a good time because we got to see, you know, we were like up close, you know, with them doing, you know, they were actually doing some kind of thing outside. So it was pretty cool. But yeah, it was a WCW show in Chattanooga, McKenzie Arena. That was probably my thing, is I loved WCW, really. And I think, you know, a lot of people did. And it was a big part of my childhood. And Goldberg, I think, you know, when he got beat, it tore me up. You know, I was a huge
Goldberg
fan. A lot
Goldberg of us,
fan,
dude.
I think,
a lot
which
of us.
Everybody was. So, you know, it kind of tore me up a little bit, but, you know, that was okay. I finally got over it. I think I watched it on it was on YouTube or something the other day, and I still had trouble watching him, you know, get tased and lose the match and all that kind of stuff. So that struggled with me.
So you're going through high school, you have people in your high school, you know, who are actual wrestlers. You have, you know, actual role models, you know, in your high school. At what point do you say, this is something I want to give a shot at?
Honestly, for me, it was much after high school. And, junior, senior year, like I said, we were in the backyard every, you know, we got into a film class at school, and that's kind of really where it kickstarted everything with us, film, wanting to film stuff. I think, you know, again, like a lot of other people or people who do backyard wrestling or want to film themselves, you know, getting hurt or getting hit with light tubes or, you know, whatever it may be. You know, we were very similar in that regard. So, you know, it really for me, what happened was, you know, I got out of, once I graduated high school, you know, I got into doing like some jujitsu and things like that, really not to fight or anything like that, not to do cage fighting or anything like that, just to stay in shape.
Sure.
You know, I had played sports in high school and, you know, wanted to stay in shape and just kind of, you know, so I'd gotten into that. And really, I happened upon something like on, it might have been at the time like MySpace, Lord, that was so long ago, or something on Facebook or something where it was like, I want to say it was like, you know, Dan Wilson and them doing a cutting a promo for like, I want to say it was GCW or GPW or one of these shows in Georgia or something like that. And I was like, man, that looks so fun. You know, that looks, you know, I've always been a big fan of like the, you know, just the, I don't say theatrics, but, you know, just the, you know, the production stuff.
The pageantry.
And, you know, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, the lights and the, and all this stuff that goes along with it. So, you know, I think, you know, I saw them doing that and I reached out to my buddy, who, you know, we ended up being tag partners for a while and was like, hey man, you know, he had actually, before me, he started to go to WWA4 down in Atlanta and he ended up buying this little dinky car and he couldn't ever make it back and forth. He had paid his like whatever his money was to go down there, but couldn't make it back and forth.
That's only about a 2-hour drive for people who are listening nationally who don't know the distance between Chattanooga and Atlanta. So it's not a schlep.
No, absolutely. Yeah. It was not. And when he told me this initially, I was like, man, I was like, you don't even have a reliable car on how you're gonna get down there. But, you know, I respected him. I was thinking, that's great. You know, you got a dream of doing this. Awesome.
And that was when Mr. Hughes was running the school, right?
Yes. Yeah, it was. Mm-hmm. And, so, you know, he tried to make it down there. I think he maybe hit 3 or 4 classes. And then finally, like one time his car completely broke down, like in Dalton or, Calhoun, which is 45 minutes or so outside of Chattanooga. Just couldn't ever get going with it. So I knew he had really had that passion to do it. So I called him. I was like, hey man, you know, I'm seeing some of these guys we went to school with, you know, they're doing all this stuff. This looks awesome. Like, let's pursue it. Like, what do we need to do to really pursue this? And that's kind of when it started for me, really just, you know, emailing promoters saying, hey, I've got some wrestling experience, which really I didn't, you know, I think that's what a lot of guys do.
Lied through your teeth.
Yeah. I mean, and you really don't know, especially being young and things like that, you don't really know how to find a trainer. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You don't really know. Okay. And then you hear, when you are able to find somebody, you hear horror stories like, oh, so-and-so, they'll just take your money and, you know, and beat you up or do this or do that. So you really don't know, you know, it's a very secretive type thing a lot of times. And now it's much different, you know, but, you know, it's very like, you know, you try to reach out to people, they're not real nice about it. They don't want to do it or there's some kind of astronomical price they want to charge to train you. So, you know, at that point in time, I was like, hey, in my mind, I'm like, hey, let's just skip it and let's just say, hey, we've got some wrestling experience and let's do this, you know? You know, kind of just be thrown into the fire and see what happens. So that was kind of my thought process, which is not a good one. I would not recommend that at all.
Just show up to a show and say we're wrestlers.
Absolutely.
Seems bad. But,
yeah. Real so bad. It could turn out really bad. So I don't recommend that. But, you know, it was kind of the way I kind of got myself in, I guess, to, you know, for better words, I don't know. So
what happens when you show up to a show and say you're a wrestler and you're not actually a wrestler? How does that process work?
Well, I actually met my trainer, the guy who, you know, so-called trained me there at that thing. It actually turned out okay for me, I'm sure. You know, because, you know, some of these places are a little shady. Some of them aren't the safest places in the world.
Oh, we're going to go into yours, brother. Don't worry.
And, you know, you run into people who, you know, aren't always the nicest, you know, people in the world, especially to people who are trying to break in sometimes, especially if you've not had any training. And, you know, and that's something that, you know, now I understand, because, you know, you get people hurt. And, you know, there's a lot of bad things that come out of that, and being in a ring with somebody who doesn't know what they're doing. You know, it can affect both parties involved. So, you know, like I said, don't recommend it. You know, I showed up. I actually brought somebody with me to wrestle, which I guess if you're going to do it, that's the best way to do it. I ended up loading the van up. Had a buddy of mine whose mom had a van. We loaded the van up because they all wanted to watch it, and, you know, thought this was the coolest thing in the world. So we loaded the van up, and, you know, we drove to Chatsworth, Georgia, and I had my first wrestling match there in Chatsworth.
Before you were trained.
Before I was trained, absolutely.
How'd the match go? What happened?
The guy I was going to wrestle ended up, once we got there, he was like, this is ridiculous. Like, I'm not doing it. I'm done. Once he saw the ring, I guess saw everything, it kind of put it into perspective for him. Like, oh my gosh, we're really going to do this. So thank God my brother-in-law was there, who wasn't in the right frame of mind, I guess you could say, to want to, you know, to say no to me, maybe, I guess. So
not in playing condition.
Absolutely. Yeah. They're not at all. So we go out there and, backyard wrestling kind of kicks in. You know, I throw a drop kick. I kick him right in the face. I bust his lip. He gets mad, really mad, tackles me. And we start legitimately like wrestling, fighting in the ring. Thank God there was probably only, you know, 15 people there, maybe, I don't know.
Super, you know, no vacancy, full house.
Absolutely, yeah. So, you know, he gets mad. You know, I hear him, once I kick him, he was like, you know, what are you doing? You know, like, just freaking out, he's bleeding. He tackles me in the ring, into the ropes, and, like, we just start to, like, basically fight, because I was just trying to get him off me. He was trying to actually fight me, you know, and it kind of turns into this this little back and forth thing in the middle of the ring, which I'm sure was the biggest cluster in the world, you know? That's kind of how, you know, that's how that went. Luckily, you know, I was saved. Guy by the name of Paul Dollar does a run out and, saves the match. He was like, take it home. I'm like, I have no clue what take it home means. What are you talking about? You know? And, so he's just like, get done, finish, pin him, do what, you know? So I tell my brother-in-law, I was like, cool down, man, chill out. You know, I flip him over, pin him, you know, and we take it to the back, you know, and that was the first experience I had with, you know, like I said, my first wrestling match, and, you know, could have gone better, I guess. Could have gone worse.
I guess it could have gone worse. So you meet the infamous Paul Dollar at this point, and this is where most of our story is going to center on. What is Paul like when you meet him?
You know, to be honest with you, he's a different guy.
Define different.
Lord.
Because, well, most of my listenership is national. They've never heard of Paul Dollar.
Yeah, you know, he's got a mullet. He carries a sword, wears a leather vest. you know, it's a weird mix of a cowboy and a ninja. That's the best way I could describe him, and I know that's probably weird, but literally that was the gimmick. It was a ninja cowboy, you know, kind of Chuck Norris. Feel he had nunchucks too. I forgot he did have nunchucks.
As one does.
Absolutely, and you know, you carry those around in your tights, and you come out with those, and that's part of your. He used to say expedition. I guess it was like his. That was his, like, whatever. I don't know. You know how when you come out in the middle of the ring and you do your thing, he goes, yeah, I'm fixing to do my expedition. And I'm like, I have no idea what that means. I don't know what that means. But, you know, he'd go out there and he would do the sword gimmick, and he would do the nunchucks, and had the leather vest, and he'd comb his hair with the brush, with the mullet.
Before every match.
Yeah, it was. You know, it was that. That's the best way I can describe him. Is when I say different, I mean different.
So he immediately says he'll train you.
Yeah, actually, it was. You know, he saw. He was like, man, I saw you out there. He goes, I guess, like, you know, you say, you know, he kind of saw something in me. You know, it's kind of what he said, and I was immediately I was drawn in. It might have been the nunchucks of the sword, but something drew me in. And you know, I said, okay. You know, I was thinking, okay. So I found somebody to train me, you know. And we exchanged numbers, and he had a flip phone. You know,
and in what year?
We exchanged numbers. I think the iPhones and all that kind of stuff were pretty booming then. It was probably maybe 10 or 11, 2010.
So not many people had flip phones at this point.
Yeah, I don't think so. So, you know, he had the flip phone. So I was concerned. I was thinking, okay, you know. But he said, you know, hey, I'll give you a call on Sunday. And I'm thinking, okay, cool. You know, I've got a guy to train me. No clue, you know, where he'd live, what I'd be driving to, where I'd be going, or anything like that. So he actually calls me on Sunday. And he was wrestling for Adrenaline Rush Wrestling, which I had actually been to those shows before in Cleveland, Tennessee, which is, you know, just right outside of Chattanooga. I had been to those shows before, and he was one of their kind of headliners, I guess you could say. And he said, hey, you know, we're doing a show next Saturday. Why don't you come? The ring will be set up. I can get you some training in, and then you can work security, which I think that's the next step in anybody's process, is setting a ring up and working security. So that was kind of what I did. I got that next weekend. I got in the car, drove to Cleveland. Again, no clue kind of what was going on or anything like that. Helped him set up a ring at the National Guard Armory in Cleveland, and worked security that night. Got a little bit of training in, I guess you could say. Got in the ring, you know, got to run the ropes and do some things like that. You know, that kind of kick-started it for me there, I guess, too, with that.
At what point does his personality start to come out?
Oh, it was immediate. Really, once I, you know, I guess after that match, at my first match, you know, you're kind of tired, your adrenaline's going, anybody talking to you, you're like, okay, yeah, cool. You know, once I talked to him on the phone the first time, you know, I was thinking, like, okay, I got some, you know, he's different, you know, he's just different. And I just chalked it up to that. I'm like, he's different, you know, good guy, but just different. And it immediately comes out, though, once you kind of really get in person with him and meet him, there's no missing it. You know, it's immediate. So,
but what are really some of these personality quirks that are a little bit different than other people that might throw the average listener off a little bit?
Absolutely. The terminology, the way he spoke the English language, you know, was very different. You know, there was one point in time, this is just an example, where he wanted to do a benefit show for what we would call, you know, what would be autistic kids, you know, or people with special needs. Mm-hmm. Well, he called them artistic. So we wanted to do one. We need to get the flyer that says, you know, artistic, the artistic kids. And some things, you know, that was a big one. He also, in the middle of a sentence, would just start whispering. And it would be just like, you know, and it took me a long time to really, I just thought, you know, okay, maybe he's just changing the level of his, you know, of his speech. I didn't know. And, you know, finally, once we delve into kind of Paul Dollar, you start to realize, like, you know, he told me, he was like, you know, why I whisper? Because I think people, you know, people bugging my phones. Or you might have a wire, or somebody over here might have a wire. And I'm thinking, like, who is following you? Why, and why would they be following you? You know, so those are kind of some of the, when I say different, like, you know, those are some of the things that I experienced. You know, it took me a while, again, to get his terminology down, the way he said things, the way he talked, because it was much different than you know, we would talk normally. And then the whole spy game, you know, the whole somebody's tapping my phone, or this is a sign. Did you see that Coke can over there with a cigarette on it? That means somebody's coming to kill me. You know, these type of things. And you're just like, what? You know, like, I'm not, you know, I have no idea. So, you know, I just kind of rolled with it initially, thinking, you know, this is just kind of, hey, I'm going to get trained. Maybe I can just, you know, get 6 months of this and I'll be okay and I can move on. So, you know, you just kind of roll with it at the time thinking, you know, it is what it is, I guess. But those were some of the things that I would say were different than other people.
Now, how was the training itself?
Oh, it was interesting to say the least. Literally what we would do was he would call me and say, can you meet me at, you know, whatever random show was going on at the time. And now this was not on a show night. This was just, you know, a show in Dalton or a show in Rome or a show that had a ring and it was set up in a building and they just left it up all the time. You know, so this might be on a Tuesday night or on a Wednesday. And we would literally just go, you know, I didn't know this at the time. I thought he had a place to fully train.
You're breaking an entry.
He would go and knock and okay. Just kind of see if, you know, so-and-so was there or we could train in the ring.
Fair.
Or
okay.
We could do that. So, you know, we trained a lot of times in Rome. There was an outdoor flea market. It was like an outdoor show, and they just kind of had a ring set up, but they never really covered up or did anything. It was just kind of, you know, you had wood coming out of the top of it, and the ropes were, you know, just kind of set up however and things like that. You know, we would just kind of go about it that way. There was a lot of times where it just kind of was, I would end up just hanging out with him. We would drive and go pick stuff up, or we would go to the flea market, or we would go, you know, it's kind of like more like Mr. Miyagi, you know, like, you know, hey, if you, you know, let's go to the grocery store. I need to get groceries, or let's go here. I need to get this. This is part of your training. You know, it was kind of like a lot of times things like that. So it was really weird, you know, and again, you know, there was one time we trained literally in a parking lot of a wrestling show, and he just kind of talked to us about psychology.
It was you and your partner.
Yes. Well, I trained. It was kind of I went more by myself, but then my partner ended up coming into the fold kind of later on. So then we would go together, but it was always the same type training. It was that kind of stuff, but more so, like I said, it was more just like kind of doing stuff with him. Like he kind of needed a buddy, I guess. You know, it was just, you know, it was kind of that type stuff. So there was not a whole lot of in-ring, you know, training. I will say he taught me to run the ropes. He taught me, how to properly bump and to do, you know, the basics. That was taught. But then after that, it was more so, you know, let's go hang out. And, you know, I need to go grocery shopping, or I need to go fix my lawnmower, or you know, there's an air conditioning unit that I need to go pick up, you know, or something like that. You know, it was just kind of that. So, you know, that's kind of how that went, really.
So at what point did he say, you know what, you're good to work matches? You know, at a certain point, there's, you know, a wrestler can break free and, you know, a trainer says, okay, you're good. At what point are you good?
With that style, probably never.
Yeah, I know.
But you know, it was probably maybe a couple weeks in. You know, he was like, you know, we taught you how to bump, taught you how to run the ropes. You know, let's go do a show. And you know, he was big on, you know, again, like I go back to the spy game stuff. You know, like everybody's out to get you. Everybody's out to do this. And so, you know, everybody was wanting to shoot on him. Everybody was going to shoot on him. So he trained me, I guess, so I could go places and just wrestle him, maybe. I don't know. So, you know, we went to back to Chatsworth and did like a Royal Rumble type match or something like that, and kind of got our feet wet again, you know, with that, probably maybe 3 or 4 weeks in. You know, and then I've started doing, I wrestled a match against my tag partner at ARW in Calhoun. That was kind of my first real match, you know? And then I just kind of would travel with him around to certain places wherever he could get booked. And I would just kind of wrestle him for the first, you know, couple months, I guess you would say.
A lot? Was he a popular wrestler around here?
I will say the Adrenaline Rush Wrestling name and brand was really big in Cleveland. I say that, I guess it was. I mean, I knew about it, and I had actually gone to a show when I was in high school and just thought it was the greatest thing ever. You know, they had all the pageantry, you know, like we were talking about. They had the big entrance, like the blow-up entrances, the lights, the music, all this kind of stuff. They had all of that. And, you know, he had gotten involved with them, I think, he, you know, and eventually was the owner of that company. And he was kind of one of their main guys. So when he wasn't working that show, I think a lot of the smaller indies around that Dalton, Chatsworth, Calhoun area, you know, thought, you know, he was kind of a big deal. So they would pick him up.
But never outside a 40-mile radius.
Not really. No, there was a couple shows that we did in Cookeville. And I can't remember if I got us booked for those shows. I might have gotten us booked for those shows. But that was the farthest, you know.
Which is about an hour away.
Yeah, about an hour, I mean, at most. So there wasn't much outside of that where he was traveling.
So, what point, because you told me the TV story with Paul. Is this where the TV story pops in, or?
Well, what we get going, you know, I get really heavy involved with helping him because he took over the Adrenaline Rush Wrestling Company, and a lot of those guys who were involved with it left. And the guys who did, like, you know, there was a big falling out between a couple of them. The sound guy left. These guys, they left. So it kind of put me in a spot where I'm young, like, in wrestling. But, you know, too, I think I had pretty good common sense. You know, I kind of knew, hey, this looks good, you know, and things like that. So, you know, he kind of started, I don't say booking the shows, but I started trying to organize things. And so, you know, he's wanting to go big, go next level, all this kind of stuff. So I end up, which, you know, I get on the internet and start researching, hey, you know, how could we get TV spots? You know, what we do? We've got the ring. We've got a building at times, I guess you could say. You know, how do you go about getting TV spots? And in my mind, you know, I just set us up an interview at a local TV station, not knowing anything about it, not knowing anything how to run TV, how to do anything like that. But, you know, I started trying to prepare for it. I was thinking, hey, this is an opportunity. We could get on TV. We could do this, so-and-so, da-da-da-da-da. So, there was a local TV station in Chattanooga. I can't remember the name. I was trying to think of it. It was in this big building downtown. It was bigger than what we were thinking, though. You know, we were thinking this little dinky TV show or TV station, but it was actually much bigger when we got there than what we were thinking. So, you know, I show up in a coat and tie, you know, with a portfolio prepared to lay out, you know, some of the characters that we had, some of the, you know, the entrances, you know, had a DVD that they had done back in, you know, a couple months back or whatever. Well, Paul shows up to this with a wife beater on, a black wife beater, and he brings his sword. Now, they won't let us in the door with the sword because there's a metal detector. So you can imagine us walking into a building in downtown Chattanooga.
In a tank top.
That is heavily, you know, it's a secure building.
Yeah.
He goes walking in with, you know, a black tank top, blue jeans, and a sword, like a legitimate sword.
Oh, my God.
And so they immediately stop.
Did he carry the sword everywhere, by the way?
It was a lot of places. Yes.
There
was
too many places, frankly.
too many. And that might have what got him kicked out of that strip club, but I can get to that in a minute. You know, he carried the sword or the nunchucks or something of the sort, some kind of knife, or, you know, because again, somebody was tapping his phone. They were, you know, there were signs all around. We just couldn't see them, you know, like the normal people couldn't see them, but something was going on. So they immediately flag us down. They won't let us in this TV station until we have to go back to the car to put the sword up. We finally come back. At this point in time, he did have a flannel shirt that he had brought. I did ask him to put that on. So he did put the flannel shirt on instead of just having the wife beater. So we go up there, and he proceeds to, you know, speak his language.
Okay.
Which, you know, doesn't go well. I guess he wanted to do the sword trick or the sword, you know, thing he did in the middle of the ring, kind of demonstrate for them how he does that, you know, and things like that. But did not go well at all. We basically got laughed out of the building. In so many words, you know, it was kind of like, okay, yeah, this is neat. We got somebody else we got to see, you know, see you guys later, you know.
We'll call you, yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. You know, kind of situation. So, you know, and so that was kind of the shot down of that. He got a little, I could say he got a little heated in the meeting. Paul did, which kind of, that's what squished it really quick. You know, they were not impressed with some of the stuff that he was putting on the table. And so, you know, he kind of tempered up a little bit, and thank God they did not let him bring the sword. So, you know, because that could have gotten sideways real quick. You know, that squished the TV deal. So, you know, a whole slew of things right there, you know.
So you're growing up in the business. You have Paul running things sideways. You're a couple months into the business, and then Paul goes haywire, from what I heard.
Yeah, you know, he decides, you know, he wants to get out of wrestling. He wants to, you know, a bunch of stuff gone. I don't know. You know, there's financial things. I don't know. He was on disability or something, but he was wrestling. I don't know how that works. But, you know, I think that kind of came into play. He was worried about somebody filming him. I don't know. Like, there was a bunch of stuff that just came into play that was just like, you know, he calls me one day and he's like, I'm selling ARW. I'm getting out, you know. He was going to sell it. What was weird to me was he was going to sell it for like $1,000 and like a mini crotch rocket was kind of like the deal. You know, I was like, you know, because, I mean, you know, it was a ring, a trailer, the name. I guess you say the name. I mean, I don't know how, like, everybody's like, oh, it's your name.
Intellectual property.
Yeah, I'm like, okay, yeah. But he was going to sell all that, get rid of all of it. So I was thinking, like, man, you know, like, if I could come up with enough money, you know, I would love to do it. Because, you know, I'm young, you know, really young at the time. I'm thinking, heck, I could set this ring up in my backyard and train myself, you know, like, yeah. Really – just work out all the time. And so I end up throwing this at him. I was like, Paul, look, you know, what if, you know, I took over, I, you know, started paying you in installments, you know, that way you don't have to fully get out. You can still come and work the shows and not have the stress and not have the, you know, the issues that you're having. And you know, we can work it out that way. So, you know, that's kind of the thing that we kind of, that's the direction we went in. Now, at this point, I had branched off and was working shows outside of just with him. You know, I had gotten with my tag partner and, you know, we were doing the Celtic Nation gimmick. And, you know, we were starting to get booked, you know, at shows in Nashville, NWA Main Event. We were at Peach State a lot. We wrestled a lot down in Carrollton. We worked with them, and we did stuff in Alabama for different companies there, and just kind of really were like, hey, let's see how far we can take this. And, you know, at one point we would leave on like a Thursday night, and we would go Thursday, Friday, Saturday, come back on Sunday sometimes. And for us, that was great. You know, I mean,
and in different states, you're traveling. You're getting your name out there.
Yeah, I mean, for the most part, you know, I mean, still we're still very green and don't know a lot, and you know, but we're getting to work some good guys, and we're you know, getting to learn and be in locker rooms you know, with a lot of good wrestlers, and just being able to kind of talk to them and see and just kind of learn, you know, how to do things and how things are supposed to be done. And so, but still on the side, you know, trying to promote the AR, you know, ARW and try to keep it going. So at this point, what I've done is, which, you know, my mom worked at our, worked at the church that I grew up in and we went to, and we had a big, huge, there's a big, huge gym, huge gym. And, so I was like, why don't we run shows here? You know, nobody had done any shows in Saudi Daisy, since, you know, I guess they used to do, is it GCW, or there was a show they used to do over near the flea market, that was that, you know, pulled pretty well. So I, that was kind of our next move, was to do that. So, you know, I did not yet fully own ARW. So the story behind kind of how I fully took over the company, was we were at a show in Carrollton, and I had been paying Paul in installments. I had probably, I don't know, I had got anywhere from $400 to $800 that I had paid him in installments, and I was paying him like every couple weeks or whatever. So he calls me after we had done a show in Carrollton, and we were downtown Carrollton hanging out, doing just hanging out and doing whatever. And I get a call, and it's from Paul, and I'm like, this is going to be good. So I pick it up. Apparently, him and his wife had been kicked out of a strip club. like I said, I don't know if the sword was involved or nunchucks or, you know, what the situation was, but he needed me to meet him, and he had left his wallet in the strip club. So, like, he gets kicked out, his wallet is left in the strip club. Why, again, I have no idea. But he wants me to meet him at a Waffle House near, like, Six Flags or something, somewhere like that. I'm like, I don't know, you know. But all I did know is he was like, if you can bring me $75 right now to this Waffle House, everything's yours. It's all yours. And we'll, you know, like, we'll be done. And I was thinking, like,
it's a bargain.
So we got in the car. It was me, my tag partner. We used to have a buddy of ours who used to travel with us because he didn't have anything else to do. So he'd just drive around with us. So we just hauled butt over to the Waffle House, you know, in Atlanta. I give him the $75. Again, he's got his black wife beater on. His wife's with him, you know, he wants to sit down and eat breakfast with him or whatever. It's like 3 a.m. So that's how I ended up getting the Adrenaline Rush Wrestling Company, you know, was Paul getting to have a strip club.
Jeez.
So from there, you know, we start running the shows in Saudi Daisy. Paul still works the shows. He still comes and works the shows. And we would use a mix of once we started running Saudi Daisy, a lot of those Saudi Daisy guys got involved, which is kind of how NWA Chattanooga took off from that point. You know, was my buddy who was my tag partner, his brother was in the music industry and had the lights and had the scenery and everything like that. So I know our first or second show we did there, I mean, it was like, you know, like a true professional production. I mean, it was wild, but it was really neat to see. So, you know, and I had a lot of those local guys booked on that show, cause I knew they were good wrestlers and they were going to draw people.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what happened. So when we would have, I mean, 250, you know, people coming through there. And it was just growing at that time. So, you know, that's kind of where that took off with the ARW and all of that type of stuff.
Now, you guys are affiliated with the NWA?
Yes. Yeah, we got...
what is it like getting in bed with the NWA, especially in those times? Because that has to be an interesting story. They were kind of a convoluted organization at the time.
You know, and I don't know a lot of the ins and outs of that. You know, Dan Wilson was kind of the mastermind behind that. He was really good friends with Bill Behrens, I think that was his name. And, you know, they worked together... you know, NWA Wildside and all that stuff. So they were really involved. We had gotten in with a high school, and it was actually funny that the principal at the high school actually won the Goldberg lookalike contest at Sir Goonies that they had had. And so he was going to go down to the power plant or whatever and train, but ended up his knees were really bad. So he ended up, you know, not, but he looks like Goldberg, has the Goldberg tattoo, bald head. I mean, he's, you know, 6'6", just, you know, a little bit thinner than Goldberg, but I mean, looks just like him. He was the principal at the school that we you know, he would let us use the building. He was great about it. I mean, literally in the summertime, we were able to set the ring up in the gym and leave it up all summer long. But from the NWA standpoint, I don't know a whole lot of that. I know during that time there was a transition, you know, because we would bring on we were really trying to push it in Saudi Daisy or in the Chattanooga area. So we were bringing on the tag team champs. I know Phil Shatter was he held the title at the time. I know Ace Rockwell had the Southeastern title. The tag champs who came in, you know, anybody with a title who they could get in, he was bringing in. You know, there were some funky stuff that happened. I don't know. Like I said, I don't know all the ins and outs.
But you didn't have to deal with the higher ups at the NWA.
I didn't have to deal with any of that. I knew we were able to use the name, I believe, through Bill Barron's.
Sure.
And kind of his promotions and things like that is kind of how we got the permission to do that and everything like that. You know, but from a show standpoint, I mean, everything was always good. I didn't get in deep with any of that type stuff.
So how long did you promote NWA Chattanooga?
I was with it for, maybe 6 months or so. Maybe a little longer. It started with the ARW shows. We ran in Chattanooga, where we ran in Saudi Daisy. And I had booked, Sean Tempers and Jimmy Rave, Ace Rockwell. It was a phenomenal show. It really was. But it was just a mix of a bunch of different guys. And I remember Dan Wilson contacted me after, and he was like, hey, he said, we should, you know, look into running shows. Again, I had known those guys. I didn't know them personally, but I had known who they were through this being in school with them and at Saudi Daisy and things like that. And I knew that they had a very good, you know, reputation and were very prominent, you know, in the wrestling world. So I jumped at that. I was like, absolutely, whatever we need to do or can do. So we ran the first couple shows at the church. Then it evolved to, you know, finding a school. And so we found a couple different schools that would let us run. So we started running these shows at the schools, you know, at that point in time. So that was kind of how that took off there.
And now they run schools at Scenic City Invitational.
Absolutely. And, yeah. It was really cool to see, you know, Scott bringing in those guys, and now you see them on AEW and you see them all over, and it's just taking off. It's just such a cool thing to see. Absolutely.
So what made you decide, did you get out of the wrestling industry after that point or?
Yeah, I ended up, I came back and did one more show like six months, a year later for a benefit. I ended up getting out, you know, I just the way life takes you and, you know, just job stuff. And, you know, it was consuming a lot of time. I was fixing to get married at the time, and my wife was great. I mean, you know, she didn't mind, you know, me going and doing the whole wrestling thing, but it was just very difficult to kind of juggle a lot of different things, you know, and because, like I said, you know, I coached football and different sports, so I was always in something. So it made it so difficult to, you know, when you don't get home till, you know, 7 or 8 at night anyways, and then on Saturday you get up and you leave again, it just made it even more difficult. So it was kind of, it was a tough decision, it was the right one for me.
Sure,
I'll say, but that kind of is the, you know, that's the direction I went and ended up getting out of wrestling. So,
do you miss it?
I do sometimes. We've kind of, you know, I where I'm at right now, where I coach, our head football coach is a huge wrestling fan. I'm talking like, I mean, just diehard wrestling fan. And, you know, it's funny, the Tommy Mercer Crimson wrestler, you know, they run shows where I'm up in now, I'm up past Nashville, where I live now.
Sure.
But they run shows up here, and you know, so we've always talked about, hey, we should do like a benefit and get these guys over here and do this kind of stuff. Like, man, Mike, you know, you can get back in the ring, and you know, because you always see it, the teachers, you know, the teacher and the all this kind of stuff. You know, we've talked about it, but I do miss it. But I get to watch it on TV, and you know, especially with some of these new outlets that you know, some of the new wrestling stuff they have on TV. It's getting better, which I'm pleased with. So you can watch that and kind of reminisce a little bit, and then leave it there, you know.
Definitely. Well, Micah, thank you so much. Do you have anything to plug? I guess that's, I always ask my guests, but you're not in the industry. But do you have anything you want to get out there or get a good word about?
I mean, I would say anybody that can get out to the watching the Scenic City Invitationals. I mean, you know, I've yet to be able to come to one. Just schedule wise and where I live and things like that. But as soon as I get back in town, I hope to be able to go see them. I hope that people can get out and keep that, you know, keep that going. That local wrestling stuff's awesome. I mean, you know, I know I heard you talk about TWE and some of those shows. I mean, anybody that can get out, you know, it's definitely a different Friday, Saturday night if it's not in your norm and you're not a part of it. But once you go, you just kind of fall in love with it. And it's something that's extremely fun. I mean, you can go and cheer on whoever you want, boo whoever you want, act like whatever, you know, scream and yell and do whatever you want. So it's definitely fun, and I think that people who aren't involved in it or don't take their kids or looking for something to do, go out and experience it one night, you know? I mean, I think that's the best thing in the world you could do.
Well, Micah, thank you so much, man. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you. It was fun. I enjoyed being on the show.
Thanks, man.
Absolutely.
Over on the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, Nate and the gang are back with the Chain Reaction podcast, breaking down the 2020 Royal Rumble. Scott and Dr. G check in with a main event reaction show that takes a look at NWA Hard Times. On a new No Holds Bar, JT and Aaron are bringing back List of Mania, and they kick off things by ranking every Royal Rumble pay-per-view. In this month's Body Press Your Luck, two-time champion Ryan Everett defends his wrestling trivia crown against Steve Williams and Jason Sherman. JT, Jenny, and D'Amato are back on Extreme Three-Way Dance, where they dive into 4 weeks of ECW television from the fall of 94. With this, ring number four joins Ryan and Cindy, continuing their look at WrestleMania. On the look at on the newest Talking WCW, Tim, Jenny, and Greg break down three matches of the Taskmaster Kevin Sullivan. Be sure to check out the Pace Nation Pop feed, littered with great content offering tremendous shows like the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, The Year in Pop, Laughing Theater, DC for You, The Great Debate, Marvel Age, The Brother Sister Rewatch Podcast, and so much more. Subscribe today. While you're at it, subscribe to the Jennifer Smith's Jenny Position feed as well. It's a new home of Geek and Sassy, Talk and Pop, Freak Out Driving, Telling Stories, Journey Through Infinity, and more. On our social media pages, the greatest sitcom of all time tournament is now underway. We're in round two. There'll be four matchups per day, so make sure to like our tournament page on Facebook or follow us on Twitter so you won't miss a single one. We've officially kicked off our 2020 stretch project, determining the greatest WCW match ever. All you have to do is research, promote matches, and build your list. Conversation rules can be found at facebook.com/GWCW matches or on the Pro Wrestling Only message board. Be sure not to forget our PlaceToBeNation.com each and every day. We have new voices and fresh takes, bringing you articles and topics in the world of wrestling, sports, and pop culture, including Trent's SmackDown on Fox Report, The Week in WWE by John Crow, Paulie's Perspective, Jason's DVD Deep Dive, and Ben's Unpopular Opinion. And don't forget about veteran columns like Glenn Butler's weekly Walk Around the Web. And if you're doing online shopping over at Amazon.com, be sure to click on the Amazon banner on the right side of the Place to Be Nation homepage, or use PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon. It takes you right to Amazon and helps us out with no cost to you.